Hello and welcome to the podcast. Support us by subscribing and sharing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and Patreon. Joining me as always is my co-host,
Craig.
And I'm your host, Adam. You're listening to Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
Here we are. On the Tom Cruise, The Voyage.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. The Cruise of Tom.
The Cruise of Tom.
I love it.
Yeah, we're cruising.
You snooze, you cruise.
And with this, we are doing Mission Impossible 2, the 2000 PG-13 movie. Ethan Hunt is sent to Sydney to find and destroy a genetically modified disease called Chimera.
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 Chimera River?
Oh, he's got there for me. Yeah, if you've never seen this movie before, roll trailer.
Identity confirmed.
Good morning, Mr. Hunt.
Sorry I barged in on your vacation.
Well, Mr. Hunt, I don't quite know where to begin.
You know me?
No. Should I?
She's got no training for this kind of thing.
To go to bed with a man and lie to him, she's a woman. She's got all the training she needs.
Welcome to Australia, mate.
This ain't funny.
The mother of all nightmares is on the loose.
I don't think I can do it.
I mean, it'll be difficult.
Very.
Well, this is not mission difficult, Mr. Hunt. It's mission impossible. Difficult should be a walk in the park for you.
You gotta be kidding.
This message will destruct in 5 seconds.
Craig, it's the 2000s. Tom Cruise is hot shit, or is he on a bit of a slope?
Hot shit. I don't think he's ever been on a slope, unless that slope is the slope to greatness. He's fucking, like, honestly, ever since he front flipped off a car on the outside, it's just been Cruise season. Apart from that one film where he's a sports agent that sucks, it's all good.
Yeah, fair enough. When did you see this movie? Like, did you see this in cinema? Or did you see it on DVD?
No, I'd have seen this on VHS.
Oh, VHS, yes.
Yeah. Because I was... Mission Impossible 1 comes out in the late 90s or something. Mid to late 90s.
I want to say it's like 96.
Yeah, I kind of saw it as a kid and I was like, what the fuck's going on? What's the knock list? Question mark. Mm-hmm. And then Mission Impossible 2 comes out and it's very much a hey, don't worry about the questions because we've got another fight scene coming up, and I loved it.
Yeah, very typical of the director's style, Mr. John Woo.
Welcome back, sir.
Welcome back. What episodes has he been on previously?
It wasn't Hard Target. Face Off?
Oh, we have done Face Off, yes.
Yes, and there is another one, I'm sure.
There is another one.
That's going to hurt me.
Yeah, slow-mo, people jumping over barrels with two guns.
Literally every John Woo movie.
Exactly. Broken Arrow.
Yes.
Yes.
Ain't it cool?
With that, he's also done Hardboiled with Chow Yun-Fat, and also did Paycheck with Ben Affleck.
Nice. That film sucks.
That feels like that could be a future episode.
Yeah. No, because it's not good. It's just guilty, that one.
Tom Cruise offered a director's gig to John Woo after seeing Face Off, the 1997 movie starring John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. But with this, John Woo, his first cut of this movie clocked in at 3.5 hours. So Paramount Pictures balked at the length and told him the final length would not need to exceed more than 2 hours. And this would probably explain why this movie has so many plot holes and continuity errors.
I mean, does it?
I believe it does.
Okay. All right. I will eat my words in a few hours when we come back to talk about it.
That's fair. I do remember there are some famous continuity errors, in terms of dents in the car and stuff like that, side. Stuff like that. But I think there's a glaring one which will probably hit straight out of the park when we watch the movie.
Is the biggest continuity error Tom Cruise's hair in this film?
He's got a quite dashing look in this.
He's gone full emo hair.
Is it emo hair though? He hasn't got the bang the spiky little sideburn bits.
Okay, that's fair enough. But if you compare Mission Impossible 1's Cruise hair, which is a Cruise cut, nailed it, and then the same haircut through every other film. This is just the one where he went through, a grunge phase, I guess.
But it's very similar to that Vanilla Sky haircut.
Yeah, or his Night and Day hair.
Oh, his Night and Day
hair. I started watching
that. Is it Day and Night or Night and Day?
I think it's Night and Day.
I want to say Day and Night.
You would be wrong. I started watching that the other day, actually. It was it's on Netflix. Got 20 minutes in and was like, I'm good. I've seen this film.
I do feel like my Netflix is a bit of a graveyard when it comes to the continue watching section.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fuck this. The writers, original creator of the TV series Mission Impossible, Bruce Geller, is obviously credited for the creation of it.
Of course.
But it's written by, this movie is, by Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Breger, who have actually appeared on this podcast beforehand.
Broken Arrow.
No.
Oh. I don't know. What?
They're very famous for being writers and producers on the Star Trek Next Generation show and the movies.
Okay.
Remember that many, many years ago where
we did a crossover episode. Yeah.
We did a crossover episode. And with that, should we start hitting some of the actors, the characters?
Oh, yes, please. Because there's one person that's in this film that everyone forgets is in this film.
And... Oh, yes, I think I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yes, who's that?
Would that be Mr. Sir Anthony Hopkins?
It would, in fact, be Mr. Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Who is actually unaccredited in this movie.
Yep, never comes back, wasn't mentioned before, one and done for old A.H.
Yeah, he plays Mission Commander Swanbeck. Now, do you know who was originally meant to play Mission Commander Swanbeck?
I 100% do. It was Ian McKellen.
Oh, well done, Craig. You've obviously been doing a bit of your research as well, I see. He turned this down. Luckily, he turned this down. Otherwise, he would not have been able to play Gandalf in Lord of the Rings.
Which is exactly why I know that it was supposed to be Ian McKellen. I have not nerded out on Mission Impossible 2, sir. I have nerded out on the LOTR franchise.
Right, so this is a bit of a running theme with some of the actors in this movie that unfortunately Ian McKellen got away, and we're quite glad he did, and because otherwise we wouldn't have him as Gandalf. But a lot of the other
could
actors...
Could have been Sean Connery, just saying.
Could have been. We have, obviously, Tom Cruise, he's in this movie. So one of the reasons why this movie was delayed so much was because Tom Cruise was shooting Eyes Wide Shut with Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, yeah, no doubt it got delayed. Jesus.
Yeah, and then scheduling on the movie as well got massively delayed for 40 days extra, largely because of unprecedented rainfall in Australia.
Oh, okay.
Hmm, interesting.
Good advice. Yeah, so, Tandy Newton's in this as well, and
she is.
She was supposed to be in something else, right?
Oh, correct. Because the production overran significantly, Fanny Newton was forced to drop out of Charlie's Angels, the 2000 remake or reboot or whatever you want to call it.
That's probably a good thing, because then that means she, by proxy, also dropped out of Charlie's Angels 2 Full Throttle, which
indeed.
Isn't
I'm,
good.
I'm trying to who. Which one would she have played? Would she have played Lucy Liu's character? You think
it would either? Well, Drew Barrymore was a producer on Charlie's Angels, so it'd 99% be Lucy Liu.
Yeah, I want to say it'd be Lucy Liu
because Cameron Diaz was the thing at the time at that point, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think she was. I've got to say, Fandy Newton, as I was watching some of the trailers and doing a bit of research into this, I forget how young she must have been in this movie. Because, you know, the most recent thing I've watched with her is probably Westworld.
Yeah, and Anthony Hopkins.
With Anthony Hopkins as well, funnily enough. The only other movie I think I can ever massively remember her from is it Smoking Aces? Not Smoking Aces. What the fuck's the movie? Rock and Roller?
Yeah.
It is Rock and Roller. And
very different movie to Smoking Aces.
Very different, yeah. And so that's got Jared Butler in it, hasn't it?
Yes, it does.
Now, a poor man's Jared Butler might be considered to be Duggery Scott.
Yeah.
Who plays Sean Ambrose. Nice little segue there, you see?
Nicely done, got, sir.
Brought around the curve. Duggery Scott, he was also going to play a big character in 2000s and went over scheduling, but he also got injured in a motorbike accident. Now, do you know which movie and what character he's meant to star in?
What year was it?
This is 2000.
And how big are we talking?
This probably, I would say, made an actor.
Wolverine.
And you like these movies. Oh, yeah, there we go. Well done. So he was set to play Logan / Wolverine in the X-Men movies. Also had Ian McKellen in it.
Yeah. That's a very closed circle, this Hollywood.
Yes. So, again, one of those things where you're kind of thinking, would Duggery Scott have been a good Wolverine compared to Hugh Jackman? Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely not.
I can't say it. He's very much... You know, we say there's two... there's two types of Scottish. I feel like Duggery Scott's bus shelter Scottish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's got that sort of... the ruggedness that you would need from Hugh Jackman's Wolverine.
Yeah, no. For me, Duggery Scott... Is it Duggery? I've always known it as Dougray.
Dougray? That's more Scottish.
Yeah. That's just always have known it.
Dougray.
Yeah, no. He couldn't have been Logan. Can we talk about the only other person that's in this movie?
There are a few other people in this movie. Nah, I mean, there's Vince Rames, who looks like a bitch.
I'm sorry, there's who?
Vin Rames.
You said Vince Rame.
Maybe.
Yep, brilliant.
Yeah, Vince Vaughn / Rame.
Vin Rames. Which always baffles me, because, like, you get the Michael Madsens, who Quentin Tarantino keeps his career alive, right?
Oh, of course, yes.
And then you've also got Ving Rhames, who for some reason Tom Cruise keeps his career alive. And look, don't get me wrong, I think that Ving Rhames is a great actor when he nails it. Mm. But it's always just felt odd to me, like, yeah, you were a Tarantino guy, and now you're basically just Luther.
Yeah, with the Mission Impossible movies, they've always got their little collective of characters now. Because, John Poison, who plays Billy Byard, who's also probably better and more known as a director. He's the helicopter Australian dude.
Oh, right. Okay.
His character is very much the Simon Pegg character later on, isn't it? He's kind of like slightly the awkward wisecracker, if you know what I mean. And you kind of think with Simon Pegg, like, when did he become like a sort of, when I say in air quotes, a Hollywood action kind of movie guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's it. It's either Star Trek or Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah, very weirdly, like, hitting it out of the park like that. It's like, oh, okay, well, you're going to play, like, Scotty in Star Trek, and you're also going to be in some of the biggest movies that come out that year.
Yeah.
Because you're with fucking Tom Cruise.
But this movie does feel like... almost like second album syndrome, like they try to go experimentally different.
The difficult sophomore album.
Yeah, so far different away from what Mission Impossible 1 was. Mm. And then Mission Impossible 3, which I think I rewatched last year, maybe early this year. And I was Mission Impossible 3 is actually good, but
yeah,
it falls under that, under like the tires of Mission Impossible 1 is a really good spy espionage show, Mission Impossible 2 is a really good action film, Mission Impossible 3 is kind of neither of either.
And yeah, then it's kind of like, that's like Fast that, and like... Furious, though, isn't it? It's like the Fast and Furious didn't really find its feet till like probably like the sort of fifth or sixth movie, in a way.
Well, this is a disagreement we're going to have, because I think it lost its feet somewhere around that fourth film. But yeah, no, like from Mission Impossible 4, which I think is Rogue Nation onwards, they've become these grand, sweeping, multi James Bondy, lots of countries, big explosions, we're going to blow up the Kremlin and jump off the highest building in the world kind of thing. And it's like, okay, you were at one point just a really kind of taut espionage thriller, though. So
yeah,
it I feel took like this film has to become get a there.
It's become a vehicle for Tom Cruise to do a lot of these big stunts, these big spectacular stunts. And you know, after the movie that's inspired us to go back and watch some of these Tom Cruise movies is Top Gun Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and the sort of not relying on the CGI too much. And I mean, even in this movie, apparently Tom Cruise had to lie to the insurance companies to say that he wouldn't be doing any of the stunts, but ended up doing something like 95% of them.
Excellent. Nearly got himself stabbed in the eye, nearly falls off a cliff. That's Tom. We love you.
A lot of that. Just some other sort of characters. We've got Richard Rabeau, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, plays Hugh Stamp. He was Dracula in Van Helsing and the Duke in Moulin Rouge. He's he's Sean Ambrose's right hand man.
It's tough to have a bad guy called Ambrose, isn't it, because they just think of custard.
Yeah, it's not very menacing.
And now Hugh Jelly.
Brendan Gleeson, he plays McCoy. Have you seen The Guard at all?
I have seen The Guard. That's it's either Martin or Neil McDonough. I think it's Neil.
Yeah, he's pretty good in that. Also, but you know, Brendan Gleeson's probably most notable as Knuckle McGinley in Paddington 2. That's probably his most famous role.
Excellent.
And now, you know, talking about butchering names, I am really going to Ray de Serbedia, basically Boris the Blade from Snatch.
It's always good to know when I've got an editing point.
Apparently Dominic Purcell's in this movie. I can't remember when he's meant to be in this. And yes, of course, and then just finishing off the undercredited Anthony Hopkins. Ooh. Now, with this budget, had a budget of $125 million.
Nice.
How much do you think this made at the box office?
$350 million easy.
I was going to say, give you a little head. This was the highest grossing movie of the year, I think.
Okay, was it 2002?
One of 2000. I want to say that. Don't quote me.
Okay, so it outshone X-Men and Spider-Man was a year later, I think? Or 2 years later than Spider-Man. But yeah, $350 million.
It apparently made at the box office $546.4 million. Ka-ching, so just over half a billion. Not too shabby, sir, indeed. Now, with this, should we go watch the movie and then start giving out?
Absolutely. I just want to bring it up now, which is in case I forget about it at the time. There is one line from this film which I remember. There aren't many, but there's one, which is when Anthony Hopkins says the line.
I know which line he goes.
Well, Mr. Hunt, it's Mission Impossible, not Mission Difficult, or something like that. And it's like,
oh, I thought you were going to talk about when very misogynistic sort of train of thought on women, but we'll get there.
No. Just the calling him out of "This is Mission Impossible."
Yeah, apparently I believe that he's the only person to ever call or say Mission Impossible in the Mission Impossible movies.
Brilliant. Do you know what? Sorry, just quickly. Do you know they work for IMF, right?
So I believe this also is the only movie that they work for the IMF, as in I like they're not running away.
Oh anymore. Yeah. This is the only one where he's not like we've got where IMF are tracking him down. But do you know what IMF stands for?
Impossible Mission Force?
Yes. Did you have that on the screen in front of you?
No, I just guessed.
Oh, brilliant. yes, the Impossible Mission Force, which is ridiculous. IMF sounds much better. All right, let's go watch this thing.
All right, so 3, 2...
Podcast. Another hour of us doing this, see how many people we can get to turn off.
It is Movie Talk Time.
Back in the room. Now, Mr. Craig.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, for those of you who haven't seen Face Off, it's this movie. This movie is fucking Face Off. I'm sorry, it's
real hard disagree. It's
what, like, okay, not only does
Face Off is a way better movie.
Oh wait, Face Off is, yeah, if you want a budget Face Off, no, like, not only do does each character take off the other person's face at a certain point, it's the same director.
Oh, true.
At the end there's a beach fight that goes on for too long. We've got doves inexplicably. And my goodness, at the end of Face Off, when they're going off in the red and the black speedboat and like ramming into each other, and in this film, again, inexplicably, they're on the red and the black motorbikes against one another. I was like, John Woo, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I don't think they're doves, though. I think they're pigeons.
No, now here's the tricky thing. They were pigeons, and I turned to my partner, I went, there'll be doves in a second. And lo and behold, a dove flies through the fire when he walks past the door.
I think that's a white pigeon. I don't think that's a white dove. We need to get a fucking bird expert in here.
Charlie Kelly, yeah. And then there's the bit where he's hanging on the ceiling and there's just a dove next to him that he looks at that flies out. So there's not a white pigeon, it's a dove. Either way, this movie is budget Face-Off.
Yeah, I like the fact that this is the real big argument. It's like, was it a dove or was it a pigeon? That's how
hashtag this dove or pigeon.
This is how good this movie was. I think we'd rather kick off discussing this film with that argument.
I mean, this film's fucking nuts.
It's nuts, but it's also it's a mess as well.
I'll eat my words. This film makes not a lick of sense.
Well, for me, it makes sense in a sense that, okay, should we just go through like the beats of the movie to a degree and then go back and then bitch about it all?
Yeah.
First off, we have Boris the Blade being extradited out of the motherland or wherever, so he could go to Atlanta, the CDC, the Disease Control Center, whatever it's called. That's where it is.
Yeah.
The only reason I know that is from watching The Walking Dead.
The Center for Disease Control, CDC, is that what it is?
That is what it is. Hey. Now, he's sitting next to what we'd believe to be Tom Cruise, or Dimitri is one of his aliases, and turns out not to be him, it turns out to be Mr. Ambrose. It takes a little while for you to figure out, and of course, and then they just basically point blank tell you why this is all being a bit of a fuck up. It's because Sean Ambrose doesn't know what Boris the Blade is carrying. He thinks he's either got the Chimera disease or whatever, but what he's actually carrying is the antidote for it. What Boris the Blade has actually done is he's injected himself with the disease because that's the only way that he gets the virus into Atlanta. Now, all this has been... the reason why he's done this is because they've created this fucking awful disease called Chimera, whatever you want to call it. And that's based on the... Is it Greek or is it Roman?
It's the Greek... god, potentially villain, anti-god, whatever the fuck, which is like a lion and a serpent and a goat, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then the hero of that story is...
Bellerophon.
What's it called? Bellerophon. Thank you very much, Craig. And he slays the Chimera. And so that's the two names you're going to hear getting thrown about all
fucking
day.
Oh, we fucking hear it. You better believe that you hear Chimera.
Now, with this, you have Mr. Ethan Hunt. He's on holiday, climbing up the mountains, as you do. And then he's then subsequently messaged by the IMF via helicopter, shooting a fucking rocket launcher at him. Found a bit weird.
He gets the special glasses that he puts on.
He gets the dad glasses, the Oakleys.
Yes, they are proper dad glasses, aren't they?
Very dark glasses.
But he gets given the mission, which is like, okay, we've got to work with two people of your choosing, but the third needs to be this smoking hot lady.
Yeah, Fandy Newton.
Yes. And, oh man, you know what this film is? Sorry, just... This film is someone in the year 1999/2000 when they were writing it went, you know, what spy movies do we like? Oh, well, you know, I like GoldenEye. All right, cool. We'll take a bit from GoldenEye. And I like True Lies. All right, we'll take a bit from True Lies. And well, we all have Face Off. Let's take a load of stuff from Face Off. I think we've got the director involved. And it's just loads. We loved Last of Mohicans, so we're going to really rip off Last of Mohicans in about an hour. There's just so much of, oh, they fucking did. There's so much stuff that I'm like, that's from another movie, that's from another movie, that's from another movie.
Yeah, it feels very cut and paste, this movie.
And so he's tasked with finding Thandie Newton, whose name is Naya.
Let me just clarify that for you, Craig. I'm pretty sure it is. Naya Hall, Naya. That's right.
So, tasked with finding her, and then we'll carry on the story after we've done that. So she is a cat burglar.
Yes, so she is.
Yes. Go on.
A smoking hot cat burglar.
She is a very attractive cat burglar, and she is in a very attractive house, stealing a very attractive necklace. But wouldn't you know it, Tom Cruise slides right into those DMs and stops her.
Yeah, so this whole scene is filmed really weird because it's like half of it's like slow-mo and then half is like normal speed. So it looks quite jarring. Like, it doesn't look like it's been done very well. Do you know what I mean? So like
it feels put together, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the foreground, like the dancers, like are in like slow-mo. So when the dress starts, it's like drapes across the screen, like Tom Cruise is moving at normal speed. Which I think if, like, maybe if you did it now, you probably might have the technology to not make it look like it's proper, you know, blue screened or whatever they've done to it. But it's I think even Tom Cruise at this point would really like this point because he really wanted to do this kind of, like, boy meets girl.
Yeah.
And then they go upstairs and they have this really, like, sort of awkward encounter in the bathroom.
Oh, it's awkward and it's hilarious and it's sexy.
Is it? Because this whole thing then leads to the ridiculous car chase. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean that scene from GoldenEye?
Well, you know when you said about the in Tom Cruise Maverick.
Tom Cruise Maverick, Top Gun. That's Maverick. What I call
it. In Tom Cruise Maverick.
Yeah, sure, right? Sure.
in Tom Cruise Maverick.
In a few when Tom two Cruise planes, men.
Are spinning, and you said it's like two birds or
two birds fucking to the death. The plummet the birds do.
Yeah, so it's like that for me watching these two cars, like, because you're like, Fandy Newton is driving, and she's like, oh, you got to come chase me, and like fucking Road Rash style, fucking smashes straight into Tom Cruise while he's on the side of a mountain, and you're like, all right, bitch, fucking chill out, and she almost crashes into some, you know, like fucking. Where are they meant to be?
I think they're either in Spain or they're in one of the South American countries.
Monica,
because we've got the... That's not a South American country.
Yeah, I thought it was more Mediterranean, like, sort of. Yeah, that was my vibe. But yeah, and then this kicks off their relationship. This relationship has no chemistry or depth to it.
Yeah, it's the tricky one, isn't it? Because, like, obviously they sleep together. Because, you know...
Which is fine. All right, you do that. You're spies. You've had... It's like... what's his name? David Lynch's Crash. You know what I mean? They've had a sort of life-changing, almost traumatizing experience of nearly dying.
Yeah.
Now they bang.
David Cronenberg's Crash.
That's the one. Yes. What did I say?
David Lynch. But you know what?
That'd be even weirder.
This car's being driven by a demon baby for some inexplicable reason that has metaphorical reason behind it.
That's right. Fucking apologize.
David Lynch. we won't be doing an hour on his films. God, actually, could you imagine if we did an hour on David Lynch films? Did you understand it? No. Did you understand this? No.
Did you have to understand it? That's the real question.
There it is. There's the hour. so yeah, they sleep together, and then he's like, "You're with me now, babe." but you're now going to have to go and sleep with your ex-partner, Dougray Scott.
And... this is the thing, right? I don't get this bit. It's like, because he's getting like so worked up and angry. He's like, I don't want you to do this. Because obviously... he's spoken to Anthony Hopkins at this point,
and right? Getting her to sleep with Dougray Scott was mission difficult, not mission impossible. That was the bit.
Well, because what's the bit he says? It's just like, oh, what are you asking to do? And it's just like, and it's like, well, she's a woman, and she's lying and sleeping around is in her nature. And that's a bit like, oh, Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, talk about Sean Connery, Jesus.
And. The funny thing is, I actually quite like Anthony Hopkins' character. He's the only one that seems like fucking very, very sure of himself in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like him. I don't like the fact that I can never tell when he's trying to do an American accent or not.
Yeah, I don't think he is. He's very much plays his, what's the name of the guy who plays in Westworld?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. He's very much that sort of character. Yeah. He's just very, very, very sure of himself.
But I'm pretty cool. Like, and I had the same issue in Silence of the Lambs. One of the greatest films ever made. But, motherfucker, like, what is your accent?
Yeah, where is he from?
I think, well, this is the thing. If Silence of the Lambs is to be believed, I believe he's American. But I think, doesn't the show Hannibal suggest that he's of some sort of... not American influence?
I don't know. Maybe.
Who knows?
But Anthony Hopkins.
Welsh.
Yeah, he is Welsh.
He's Welsh as fuck, yeah. But yeah, so he says to Tom Cruise, like, hey, you know, she's a woman. She'll sleep with her ex-partner. Don't even worry about it. And the argument that the two of them have is like they've been together for 2 years, like they've talked about settling down, getting out of the business together. And it's like the whole conversation is like, oh, it's one final ride, but, you know, you still got to ride your ex. When in fact, they've been together for about 24 hours.
Yeah, that's the thing. I can't get my head around. And obviously, as we said earlier, that this movie originally clocked in at like 3 hours or something like that. And John Woo very much has stated that he when he read the script, he very much wanted to come from less of the action side of things, but more from the sort of love interest and the development of these characters.
Well, he missed that marker.
But that's the thing. So I wonder how much of that was cut out, because there was no time for that sort of deep and meaningful relationship to flourish. And well, not into the way that sort of would control... Tom Cruise's behaviour in a way, like when he's then relaying this message to Fandy Newton, when she's just like, I don't want you to do this. Oh, you know, like it pains me to make me think that I'm making you, this woman that I've literally just met, to go and do this very dangerous mission. Fair enough. You can come from it from that point. It's like, hey, look, I know that this is risky. But this is as Mr. Hopkins does say, this is a Mission Impossible.
Not her Mission Difficult.
Not Mission Impossible.
Yes, he has the line of like, oh, would it make you feel better if I was upset about this? Yes. Then feel better. It's like, clickety-clack. Good job.
Clickety-clack.
So the team is assembled. We've got Ving Rhames as Luther.
Bitch. Yeah.
we've got the Aussie guy, Billy Baird. Billy.
Oi, Prime Minister.
We've got Tandy Newton and Ethan Hunt, and the mission.
It feels that there's not enough people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like it really does. It really feels. I suppose obviously compared to maybe some of the other Mission Impossibles or the original Mission Impossible movie, the first one.
Mm.
It's like, oh, you got Luther and you got Billy, and it's like, all right, and anyone else? Like, because you don't really feel like Fandy Newton is part of that crew.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm going to just say it now. We've been recording for 34 minutes. Obviously, Tandy Newton, she's changed her name. Is it still pronounced Tandy Newton?
I always thought it. What would she change it to?
I think it has W-E at the end now, which is like more in keeping with her ancestry. I just don't know how it's pronounced if different.
Ah, do you know what? You're right, actually, yes. She has changed her name to W-E.
But again, I'm not sure if it's still pronounced as we've been... I don't know. I also don't want to get it wrong.
At the time, it would have been Fandy Newton.
And
Van D. Wee Newton.
Brilliant. So they've assembled the team, and the first thing that they've got to do is get Naya arrested.
Yeah, so and then they basically post about it on the weirdly, it's kind of like, on all the messaging boards or something like that, and all the international police databases and things like that. And you're like, because they're like saying, because Dougray Scott's character, Sean Ambrose, has now done this plane hijacking, blown plane up, killing Boris the Blade, he's going to be monitoring all these things. And you're a bit like,
I read it.
This is a bit of a stretch.
I read it already. As he was just obsessed over Naya, and that's it. Yeah. You know, he's just he's just stalking her Facebook. You know, he's she's left her Instagram open to for people to view, and he is just every day being like, "What she posted? What's her story?"
Yeah. Do you like the bit when she's jet boat over to his lake mansion?
Mm.
She walks out. It's a little bit of a windy day, and a scarf blows off, and Sean Ambrose grabs his scarf menacingly quick. But you're like, okay, cheers, mate.
Did like that, but I had the overarching question, which is, how did they get her out of Seville?
That, and why is she not wearing any shoes?
They took him off in the Seville prison, like. And then, but that's the whole, she gets a real raw deal in this whole thing. Like, she gets sent to prison, okay, we don't see it. And then she's forced to sleep with her ex, okay, yeah, we kind of half don't see that. And then she injects herself with Chimera and only just gets saved. Like, she really takes a pummeling.
Oh, does she now? but the thing is, I kind of feel like she didn't have to do any of this. And let's be honest, like, you know, she's not innocent. You know, I mean, one of the deals behind this is they expunge her criminal records.
Yeah, with Interpol, which is like, how then are you travelling round?
Well, she's an international get burglar.
She's not. Anyway.
A lot of sneaking around.
That's where I wore these sneakers.
Yes. Richard Brero's character, Harry Stamp. Hugh Stamp. He's very suspicious of Naya Hall.
Right. You know my theory on The Departed.
Oh, mate, I knew you were going to go here. Like, do you think that there is some sort of slight undertone of homoeroticism? Yep.
Yes. Yep. Yes, I do, sir. And then, like, because he goes up to Captain Custard and is like, hey, in his amazingly terrible South African accent, like,
yes, I agree,
it's not quite diplomatic immunity, but it's pretty fucking bad. So he goes up to him, he's like, she wasn't exactly gagging for it when she left here, don't you think it's a bit suspicious, sir? And Dougray Scott's response is to chop this motherfucker's finger off say, look, she may be trying to screw us, but I'm gagging for sex, so she stays. It's like, and he says to Stamp, I have the capabilities for sex. So, wait, is Stack a eunuch?
Mm-hmm. Oh, good question. I feel that Mr. Custard Tart comes across as very controlling in all aspects, you know what I mean? And I think this is one of the things that, Tom Cruise says about Ambrose, is that he has a sort of like a bit of an itchy trigger finger, essentially. You know, he always, he's very different side of the spectrum to Mr. Tom Cruise, who wouldn't even hurt the hair of on a security guard.
No, and he's also,
which is bullshit.
Oh, 100% bullshit. But also, Dougray Scott's character, Captain Custard Tart, is all I've got now. So thank you for that. he's like a petulant teenager.
Yeah, he seems to be those kind of characters, I think, are meant to be their own downfall, like through their own arrogance and overstating their own position, in a sense.
Mm.
And in this character, because again, it's not fleshed out as much. It's like, why does Sean Ambrose hate Tom Cruise? You know what I mean? Like, why does he hate Ethan Hunt so much?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, and it's because, you know, they've played each other, or he's, you know, Sean Ambrose has had to play Tom Cruise or Ethan Hunt before. So you're like, okay, does he feel like he's like, you know, he's better than Ethan Hunt? You know, he's kind of like, there's that sort of like rivalry at work.
Yeah.
But then you kind of like, it kind of almost feels that these two don't even actually really know each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think to answer your questions about like why two spies see each other as rivals and then go against one another, despite the fact that they were on the same team at one point, you should just watch GoldenEye. Honestly, it's got all the answers in there.
So where are we at now? They check the photos.
They check the photos and you find out that Brendan Gleeson is trying to buy both the virus and the cure for £37 million.
£37 million.
Put a pin in that for when Thandie Newton says it later, because it's always very funny. And they've got to go in. So because of that, they've now got to bust into the building where the Chimera.
So they realise that Custard Tart doesn't have the virus, so they now need to go and destroy the virus before it gets released anywhere. So set up basically the wiring from Mission Impossible 1, where he sort of flies through the roof vent down into the lab. And there's a security guard there, but he doesn't see Tom Cruise because Tom Cruise, just in the nick of time, manages to do some sort of cool backflip and stay hidden. And he's like, cool, can we do this in every Mission Impossible movie?
Well, this is the thing. Like, and I, you know, this film, question mark on whether or not it's guilty or guilty pleasure, we'll get to that at the end. But any time you show me Tom Cruise having to be quiet whilst being suspended by wires, I'm in. It's 100%. Like, you know what? I don't care about the context. I just want to see it, and it's always
I think this is actually. I doubt. Obviously, this is a real stunt, but I think it does actually look quite fucking cool. Like when just there is that level of like tension when, you know, the vents are just slightly opening just as he's reaching them, and he dives straight through. I didn't think the timing of the tension of getting the wire out was all that. It's like, you've got to get the fucking wire out before a fucking vent closes. And you're like, pretty sure that's pretty easy to do. I do like the back and forth between Sean Ambrose explaining Ethan Hunt's plan, because he knows him so well. And he's just like, right, so this is what he's going to do. He's going to break into this place. He's not going to go from the bottom, because he wouldn't do that. He's going to go from the top. So he's going to do some fucking bullshit aerobatic, you know, like backflip shit. Mm-hmm. And you think that's quite funny, because that's, you know, that's exactly what he does. And you again get to then see the different, like, the spectrum of these characters, because then when they do eventually sort of storm the biolab, they do it, you know, guns blazing sort of thing, whereas Tom Cruise is meant to be like all stealthy and quiet and shit.
Oh, they go in like Terminator.
I was thinking more like Matrix Lobby, you know what I mean? Everyone in this movie
lobby,
thinks
fair.
In the fucking Matrix. Everyone's wearing leather jackets and glasses and stuff.
And it's all slow-mo.
But
yeah, so then there's the problem with the generators that means that there's the 8-minute cutoff between Ving Rhames and Tom Cruise. So Tom Cruise doesn't know that Nye is coming with Captain Cherry Pie and his merry band of fake accented men. And there's that tension of like, destroy the Chimera, destroy the Chimera. And then for the third one, he's like, I guess I won't destroy the Chimera.
Yeah, I'm wondering himself, is like, because he's thinking about Mr. Boris of Blades injecting himself, and he's having that slight little flashback to it, and he's like, oh, why did he end up doing it? Like, should I? And I do wonder if he's more thinking maybe he should do that, you know, himself. It's like, because he's meant to actually set, because Anthony Hopkins is like, I need you to get a sample of the Chimera. And I'm wondering if he's having that sort of resolution himself. It's like, should I take this? How am I going to take it? Should I inject myself? I can't believe a good friend of mine did this. You know, I feel so bad and so sad. Obviously, whatever the fucking his motivation was for having that pause, we'll never know. that's when Mr. Sean Ambrose comes in and starts shooting the fucking place up, which I find very weird, right? So because they come in guns blazing, blow pretty much half the lab up, and then they're worried about don't shoot the fucking virus.
Yeah, it felt very much like an afterthought. That felt like a clickety clack. Oh shit! Why wouldn't they kill him in this scene? The virus. All right, we'll add in the virus. Does it matter about the rest of it? Nah, don't even worry about it. Clickety clack.
And then Fanny Newton's obviously there, so they send her out to go pick up the virus, and she injects herself very unselfishly.
And then Nathaniel and Hawk, from Last of the Mohicans, says his line about, "Don't worry, I'll find you."
Yeah, it's like, just stay alive. I'll come and find you. I'm going to jump into this waterfall.
I was watching it. And paused it and showed Tara, and I was like, "This is what this film's ripping off right now. It's really bad." So he escapes, and then it's the ticking clock. We've now got 20 hours.
Set your watches.
Now my question about that is, what time does she inject herself? Because it's night time. We know that much.
Yes. I would think that if you're going to storm any place, then you're probably doing it like at some point in nighttime / morning. So obviously...
Yeah, you're looking at 12 to 1.
Yeah, I would say that.
Right?
So like, I'd give that.
The cleaners haven't come in, and the night shift are probably asleep. 12, 1, maybe 2, right? So she's got 20 hours. No. It's just 100% no, because the following thing, the following day when she's going to jump off the cliff, maybe, it's definitely not 8 p.m. It's the consistency of time versus time that's passed versus time of day doesn't add up for this whole 20 hours.
But it's gone to the next day, hasn't it?
No, I'm aware it's gone to the next day, but it should have been later in that day.
But,
Because Tom Cruise is like, she doesn't have much time left. It's like, I'm pretty sure just based on the sun,
I get what you're saying. I'm with you now. That's cool.
That level of... consistency. I feel like, and again, I didn't go through it with a fine tooth comb, God forbid, but it felt like, this is too. The day is too bright at this point for this to be the final moments before.
Yeah, no, that's actually a good shout. I thought you were, I thought it was going to come down you like a ton of bricks there for your argument, but you've put your case in point across, and I side with you. Well done, Craig. Case closed.
Case closed. Moving on. Bird law.
One of the things that I felt, because they kind of set up the island where they end up going to, because Marcel Wallace is like, this is the island lab, but this is the wrong one. We're actually looking at the skyscraper. And you're like, all right, cool. And then you go to the island. It's like, why do you even need to set that bit up? Like, it's like some sort of Chekhov's gun sort of thing, but... It's like, it's not. It's just like, it feel again, it just feels that there was more to this as being cut out, and why they end up going to this place in the first place. But
no doubt. And there's bits like, we're going to get into this final kind of climactic fight scene, and there's so many bits in that where I'm like, how does that make any sense? I do have to just to stop the people getting angry. Marcellus Wallace.
What did I say?
Not Marcel Wallace. He's not Marcel Wallace. He's not the monkey from Friends.
Yeah, my mate Marcel.
So the deal is going down with Brendan Gleeson, and Tom Cruise breaks in.
Yes. Somehow breaks in. And he does all those fucking Street Fighter moves. He does the fucking Guile flash kick. He does the... Yeah. He might as well do the fucking Hadouken as well.
That would be great. If this suddenly, in Crank, when Jason Statham's having a fight and then it turns into Godzilla versus King Kong type?
Yes. Is that the bit where he puts the car battery on his tongue?
No. If there's a bit where it cuts to old school, King Kong versus Godzilla, where it's like you can see the strings and you can see the buildings are made of cardboard sort of thing as a callback to old school.
It's been a while since I watched those movies.
I don't like I don't like the Crank movies, but I thought that was like, oh, okay, that's memorable. They were trying something. If in the next Mission Impossible movie or whatever the next like big franchise is that isn't Bond or Mission Impossible, every fight just turned into a scene from Tekken, that'd be very good. Great.
I'm very much a fan of Tekken.
So yeah, he does the front flip kick on someone's chest and kills them and breaks someone else's face and breaks someone else's face. A lot of face breaking.
And then with this, he blows up the door. And what's his fucking face? Dracula comes out, Mr. Stamp, and somehow, from the point of blowing up a grenade with both of them, Mr. Hunt, played by Tom Cruise, has managed to change clothes and put on a rubber mask of himself, but also just handy enough to have the face mask of Hugh Stamp as well, right?
Or the like 3D printer he needs to make that, and the voice recognition chip that he needs for
now,
that as
well.
The
thing what I don't kind of get about that is it's like, I'm pretty sure it's established that Sean Ambrose's character, you know, when Fanny Newton's like, how many people are at the compound? She's like, oh, it must be like half, you know, dozens. You know, I mean, fucking loads of people. And so he's got a bit of a circle, because not only does he have that dude, he has the other guy that, I always forget his fucking name, he looks exactly like the guy from Sons of Anarchy, the guy with a scar on his face, Irish fella. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And so you're like, well, did you have a mask of everybody? Did you have a mask and the fucking voice changing thing of everybody? How do you even have that? Like,
and if you do have that, how are you carrying it? And how did you have time, like, for that fight to finish and then change everything, etc.?
Yeah, because you...
And isn't it coincidental that his clothes fit you like a fucking glove?
It's like that. It's like, yeah, so because they hear the bomb, the grenade go off, and they both get knocked down to the floor, as in, i.e., like, yeah, I'm not saying they both got knocked out, but they've definitely had the wind taken out of them. You know what I mean? So, but it's enough for Tom Cruise to get up and be able to fuck this guy up. But this guy is obviously, you know, he's savvy and probably, you know, trained enough to kind of give Ethan Hunt a run for his money. So why is it that Ethan Hunt gets up and, like, just fucking shakes off a grenade, but this guy doesn't? Do you know what I mean? It's just none of it makes fucking... That bit, none of it makes sense.
It is very much a fucking shut the fuck up Affleck
moment. And then, you know, quite cleverly he says, oh, you know, why is he not talking? Oh, I'll probably break his jaw. Cool.
But he'd still be able to open his fucking mouth.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. You know, like, all right. And then, unbeknownst, Sean Ambrose ends up shooting his, in air quote, best friend. His
secret lover.
Yeah.
He's a secret lover.
Possibly homoerotic best friend.
Man, 1 hour got cut out of this film and it was basically just 60 minutes of S&M gimp play. Like, fucking extracts from Event Horizon, but with Dougray Scott and Hugh Stamp.
Yeah, so this is just gives enough time for Mr. Cruise to do his running, because we haven't seen enough running in this movie already. But then they get out onto the...
Oh, sorry, we're skipping over. Like, look, he kills Hugh Stamp. He kills Hugh Stamp. And then he looks all happy and pleased, like, he's won the day. And then he sees Hugh Stamp's missing finger. Yes. Oh, Chekhov's finger, everybody.
What?
And that's when he starts crying, like a little bitch.
He's like, oh, no, who am I going to bum now?
And then Ethan Hunt runs out of there, and then basically we just get a fight scene for 25
minutes. Now, right, the bit that I don't quite get about this, because it's an island, right? It's a little compound where, and you can see the size of the fucking island, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, where are these motorbike guys coming from?
Garage.
But you're like, why do you need motorbikes on this tiny rock?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's not like, because you don't see the motorbikes come with the motorcade. You know what I mean? You don't see them fucking rocking up as like security guards and like, oh, we're escorts for
no, everyone. they're not like the Red Guards from Star Wars.
Yeah, no, they're just like some, and they're not dressed like fucking anybody either, like security guards, just like two random fucking motorbikers. It's like, hey, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and climb up this very rocky, like fucking, like island face to try and run over a guy with a gun. It's like, yeah, this is going to work. And I think there's two of them. So he fucks up for one of them, the one with the black motorbike, because then Doug Ruth Scott gets on the red motorbike.
Yeah.
But you're like, yeah, it's just like, okay, it was very much like Tango and Cash at the end, where it's just like, fuck it, we're just going to, why not have a fucking monster truck? You know what I mean? Like, why not just have a fucking minivan with a minigun?
We're just going to introduce a character that you've not heard before. Just he's been looking forward to fuck you up. Just we're going to get that guy back in.
Yeah? Yeah, it's just a little bit like, all right, okay, cool. It just screams a little bit like, then what? Fuck it. Well, we need motorbikes because we're going to do a big motorbike set. Okay, cool. Just stick the motorbikes in there. And you're like, all right, okay, cool. And then now you have all the motorbike stunts with, you know, Tom Cruise like side saddling. You have him doing some endos and spinning around and shooting, which is quite cool. Like, don't get me wrong, it looks fucking cool. It's very much sells the trailer, you know what I mean? It sells the movie in the trailer, this film. And but it all combinates for them to do the fucking the diving into each other on the motorbikes, which is fucking ridiculous, because if you pause or slow it down, right, you see the motorbikes pass each other.
Right? Right.
And then, 2 seconds later, the bikes are 10 feet up in the air, exploding into each other. And you're like, right, well, how did that happen?
I hope someone got fired for that blunder.
But then, also as well, yeah, Custard Tart and Tom Cruise come together as one.
But why is he even on? Why is Captain Cherry Bakewell on the goddamn bike to begin with? Ethan Hunt's got a motorbike. Right, tick. He's got a head start. Okay, cool. Fucking Ambrose comes out with a gang and his whole team, and they've all got their cars.
Yeah.
And that motorbike is like way away.
Like, yeah,
it's an absolute walk away. Now, when Ethan Hunt is getting away, Ambrose thinks to himself, right, I'm going to take a good 3 or 4 minutes to get this bike and then play catch up from there. So that's another, like, I'm gonna waste nearly 10 minutes just so I can be on the red bike when he's on the black bike, because, you know, two sides of the same coin or whatever. And then it's unfathomable.
It's the fact that also Tom Cruise is like pegging it out that compound like fucking like Evel Knievel style. And then when they're going after Tom Cruise, you can see, like, I don't think Doug Ruth Scott's very comfortable on a motorbike.
No.
So he's very much in I want to say cruise control, but
he's in Scott control.
So they have their fucking showdown on the beach, like the Warriors,
they have the showdown on the beach whilst at the same time Luther and Billy have to go stop Naya from jumping off a cliff and killing herself.
Yeah, but that's not good. Now, it's almost like, who gives a fuck about that? Because you're just like, all right, you just got like, there's a race for that, and it's just like they fly the fucking helicopter and they're just like, don't do it, and she's like, oh, okay.
But one of the things that Dougray Scott, like, we've kind of skipped over the fact that Dougray Scott's like, I don't just want 37 million, I want 450 stock options.
This
time next year I'll be a billionaire or whatever. He's like, in a few hours' time, there'll be an outbreak of Chimera in downtown Sydney. There won't, Dougray Scott, because you left Naya alone. She walked away from the place you left her. So, at the very worst, there's going to be a dead Chimera lady on the beachfront somewhere. And it doesn't make any sense that he's like, oh, you can walk free, but you're definitely still part of this plan.
Yeah, that as well. And also, how one of these things is like, yeah, stocks are going to go fucking skyrocketing. What? The company that's made this plague, you know, think they're that, you think their stock's going to go up?
I think
a lot of people are going to go to fucking prison, mate. I think that's what's going to happen. I think a lot of people are not going to want to touch any of that fucking, oh, you've made the antidote for a virus that you fucking unleashed on the fucking world. Also, a little bit on the nose. A little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, ask Pfizer or the Oxford exactly. AstraZeneca how their stock's doing.
Okay, we'll look into it. Look it up.
Pull up that video.
It's a thing.
Yeah, so they have the fight and it ends and then it doesn't end and then it ends and it doesn't end and then it really ends.
Apparently,
and
it's very much inspired by Bruce Lee. Apparently, this is how Tom Cruise and John Woo, even though they had a lot of clashing button heads, they're both big fans of Bruce Lee movies and his work. So
does that mean that Nicolas Cage and John Travolta were also big fans of Bruce Lee? Because this is the face-off fight scene.
It's a little bit, yeah.
It's the same fucking thing. It's, we can't afford speedboats this time, John. How about motorbikes? Motorbikes we can do. But all that money we've saved, we're now going to get Tom Cruise to do like a fun flip, whereas before we had a harpoon gun or something. It's the same fight, and I'd just always much rather be watching face-off.
Yeah, and quite famously, the whole knife going to Tom Cruise's eye is real. It obviously doesn't stab him, but very much that knife is on a wire that's been measured precisely to be that far away from Tom Cruise. And even Tom Cruise was reportedly has said to Sean Ambrose, try and put your whole weight into it. You know? And I would be a bit like, that would be the one thing where I would be like, if that was CGI. You know what the thing is? Is when I watched that fucking movie, I think the first time, even when I watched it again, I didn't think that was real.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the payoff behind it is like, all right, you did that for real, did you? Why? It looked shit. Like, you know what I mean? It didn't look like fucking anything.
Yeah, there's a few janky-ass CGI shots in this film.
Yeah, there are, and
like when Tom Cruise is looking, and we're seeing what Tom Cruise is seeing in the reflection of his sunglasses, and it's like, ah, you can keep it.
Yeah, so it all works out then, because Mr. Custard Tart eventually tries to shoot Mr. Hunt in the back, but he's too savvy, and even Hunt manages to kick up. Did you see where that gun came from? The one he kicks out of the sand.
Yeah, it's dropped when they fly off the cliff. That's right. Tom Cruise's gun, and they do like an insert shot of it hitting the sand just to be like, hey, remember the gun. You know what would have been nicer?
What's that?
If Naya had anything to do in this film and she killed.
I was Captain thinking Custard this, because I've forgotten the end of this movie, and then the fact she's hanging out the helicopter door. I was thinking, well, she had some sort of like rifle or something like that and just fucking put one between his eyes or something like that. I'd be like, all right, well, she kind of got her revenge in a way.
Give her some onus. Give her some character. Let her kill the guy that she's been forced into sleeping with.
Yeah. Is it implied that she actually sleeps with him?
100%.
Fair.
Yeah. I don't think Captain Ambrose would have kept her around because, he's got that... I am gagging for it. It's like, dude, chill. Just go tug one out and fucking stop trying to take over the world.
Yeah, so with this, everyone lives pretty much happily ever after. Andy Hopkins says for Tom Cruise to go on holiday. And he says, well, you know, I should tell you where I go. And he's like, well, it wouldn't be a holiday if you did. And roll credits. Bow, wow, wow. Bow, chicka, chicka, bow, bow,
chicka, bow, chicka. Hands in guitar.
Yeah, all in all, a fucking mess of a movie, I think.
It is. I'll let you do your thoughts, and I'll do mine.
I'll do my thoughts. From what I believe, how they got John Woo into this movie, apart from obviously Tom Cruise and a fucking shit ton of money, because I think at the time, Mr. Wu was doing a commercial for Nike in Brazil when Tom Cruise approached him, and when they tried to sort of go through the script, they very much explained all the action scenes first, and they're like, right, we want to do this action scene, we want to do this action scene. So what they've in my head and how this movie is being presented, that is what this is. It's very much like it's a series of events that is loosely linked together to just show off all these big action set pieces. And through this, there's a very incoherent story that, you know, it's very much as simple as it is. It's very much as a virus as an antidote, and you've got to try and, try and stop this disease from spreading. It's just like, but you're like, okay, cool, I get that. But everything else in this movie, I'm just like, I c- don't care about. I don't care about any of the actors. Like when Ving Rhames is his van blows up and things like that. It's like, oh, is he dead? Oh, I don't care. Like, because you know what I mean? It's just like, he's a character from the first movie. It's like, and that's what I mean. It's just like, they try doing like that little throwback there, and he's like, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? It's like, make me care about these characters. Why do I care that there's any danger or there's a sense of urgency? Show me some reason for their behaviours. Why has fucking Sean Ambrose done this in the first place? Why has he decided to go, I am going to fucking turn against the IMF and I'm potentially going to release this fucking awful disease on the world, killing millions of people so I can become a fucking billionaire? Why? What reason do you have for doing that apart from greed? And it just doesn't feel that there's enough reason behind it. Why, you know, fair enough, Vandy Newton doesn't want to go back to see Sean Ambrose. But why? Why is he? Was he just a fucking over-controlling dick? Or was he like a complete monster? But then why was she with him for like 10 years? What happened in that 6 months for her, you know, for her to leave him? You know what I mean? Why does Tom Cruise give a shit about one-night stand, essentially? You know what I mean? It's just like so many fucking questions that you can just ask about just the characters. I don't care about the overarching plot of this movie. So that's why just at the end of this movie, it just feels fucking hollow. It feels like a bit of a shell of a movie. It just feels like, yeah, we pumped a load of money into this. And this is one Mission Impossible movie and a Tom Cruise movie, which is probably a blip on his resume, because you could say there's a lot about Tom Cruise movies. You can say there's a lot of big action set pieces. Pretty much all the Mission Impossible movies are like that. But they seem to have a little bit more, you know, grounding. They seem to have a little bit more behind the characters, a little bit more development. I don't know, what do you think?
I agree 99% with everything you're saying.
Mostly.
Yes.
I agree mostly.
I agree that it is mindless entertainment. I agree that it is very much how do we just, who cares how, but let's get from fight scene A to fight scene B to fight scene C. You don't really need to pay attention. Again, you know, watching it with Taryn when she was like, oh, what's going on? I was like, don't know. Who cares? Like, he's the good
guy.
Shut
up, woman.
He's the bad guy, and that's the shit they're fighting over. The rest of it, really, they don't know. The people we're watching don't know, so we don't need to know. And it's very confused, and it's very janky. Janky is the best word I can think of for this. But having said that, when Luther kills the guy in the car with the rocket launcher or the grenade launcher, and Tom Cruise rides through the flames and the music's playing and Dougray Scott's on the motorbike, I was like, I'm still having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It may be nonsensical, stupid crap, but I'm having a great time. So my takeaway is this is by far and away the worst Mission Impossible film. It is the second worst potentially Tom Cruise movie. And I'm still happy to watch it because it's still a higher caliber than most other. Imagine this being like a Dolph Lundgren pick, you know?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I get it. Like, this is because it's the worst of the Mission Impossible movies, it gets a bad rap, but it's probably better than most action movies.
Yes, absolutely, it is. And from that, I will have to say, guilty pleasure. Proper guilty pleasure, because honestly, as well, like, it's 2 and a bit hours, it flies by, like, it really does, like, boom, 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 with that.
I think we had a different experience.
Oh, man, I got to the final 20 minutes and I was like, whoa, okay, where did hour and 40 go? Because I don't know what's going on, I don't really care, it doesn't matter, but yeah, 20 minutes to go. That's... here we go, action scenes.
Yeah, I suppose it is quite funny that we both have a take. Because it was when we were discussing which movie to do, we were looking at some of the suggestions and we were like, should we do this movie? And it's like, 2 hours 30?
Yeah.
Like, and then we looked at this and it's like, this is the shortest one.
Yeah, 2 hours.
We do this flat one. Cool, awesome. So, yeah, guilty pleasure. I see where you're coming from with it. I would too give it the guilty pleasure thumbs up rating. It's not bad in that sense, you know, it's very entertaining, it's very good, but it's definitely not a good movie.
No. And it doesn't have anything particularly iconic, like, again, the Dubai base jump or the...
I think the motorcycles clashing together and them jumping up, that's iconic. That's been parodied.
That's only iconic because of the Ben Stiller bit.
Well, it was parodied in Scary Movie 2.
Oh.
With the wheelchairs.
God, I don't remember it.
You know, where the guy's in the wheelchair and he's racing the ghost.
Nope.
Okay, cool. Scrub that from your mind, yeah?
cut. This has been Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema Podcast on Mission Impossible 2. And good for them for not giving it a colon, either. Ghost yes, no Protocol colon. Came in and fucked everything up. But it's Mission Impossible 1, Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3. Good for them. This has been Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema Podcast. We have been talking about Mission Impossible 2 from the year 2000. If you like what you heard, please give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a share. Oop, I stumbled over a few of those. Doesn't matter. We're powering on.
I saw you tripping. We'll call
We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, iTunes, Spotify, all other major streaming apps. Thank you still to Benjamin Tay-Tay-Taylor for giving us our £3 a month. We are on Patreon, where you can find different ways to contribute to our drinking problems. Until next week, where we'll be doing another Tom Cruise movie, hopefully not 2.5 hours long. It's been a pleasure talking to you, my friend. And
it's always a pleasure talking to you. I think as well, we need to do a little bit more like shout outs. Maybe we should do that at the beginning episode. We should shout out to Patreon members.
Until members. We stop paying ourselves, it's member. All right, man, you enjoy your weekend, and I will speak to you next week.
I will speak to you next week on the next episode, Craig.
Yes. Where we will do Minority Report, maybe. I've looked into the future and, yep, we're doing Minority Report. Nice.
We are watching a movie that we are talking about. So sit back and relax, and it's time to talk about it. Talk about it. Maybe get some popcorn or maybe some snacks, because we are watching a movie that we're gonna be a talking about. Talk time.